And we're glad you're with us on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, let's spend this half hour on the road, talking about how the pandemic has impacted driving, for one. We'll also talk about new car and truck technology. In just a few minutes, we'll be joined by Dan McGeehee of the University of Iowa Advanced Driving Simulator. He'll tell us about the goals of his new $7 million grant, research on automated cars in rural America, in rural Iowa. But first, we've all been enjoying super low gas prices due to a number of reasons. Worldwide, people have been driving less, of course, and there's a worldwide oil glut. Here in Iowa, we're paying on average, what did I look up this morning, $1.75 per gallon on average. The national average, about 10 cents higher than that. So gas prices have plummeted. No secret there. But did you know that the number of speeding tickets in the state has jumped? Let's talk about what's happening on our roads and highways with Sergeant Alex Dinkla. He's Public Information Officer with the Iowa State Patrol. Sergeant Dinkla, welcome to our program.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
So tell us, what changes has the Iowa State Patrol seen out there in the on the highways since the start of this pandemic a couple of months ago?
You know, off the get-go, we saw traffic, obviously, when the governor put the proclamation order into effect, and we saw more people starting to work from home. We saw a huge reduction in traffic that was out on our roads, somewhere around, like, close to about 55% traffic was reduced from 2019. We're now starting to see, within the last few days, we're starting to see that traffic count on our roads starting to pick back up.
Mm-hmm. So as the governor has opened up, loosened restrictions, and people are trying to get the economy going again, going back to work where they can, you've seen correspondingly more traffic on our highways.
Yeah, we're starting to see that traffic count go back up. Obviously, more people are starting to go back to work. We're starting to see people go out and about more. But the one alarming thing that we really saw was, even when the traffic was reduced around 55% on all of our roadways around Iowa, we saw the amount of speed that people were driving. That really climbed a lot. The latest numbers that I just pulled yesterday, for instance, our speeds at 20, people traveling at 25 miles an hour or more over the speed limit, that percentage on a four-year average has increased 64%. And people that are traveling equal or greater than 100 miles an hour on our roads, that's a pretty alarming stat. That is up 74%.
Wow. Is that just during the pandemic, since the pandemic, or does it predate that?
That is just our four-year average for this same exact time as it was last year. So, okay. For instance, for 2020 so far this year, we've had 431 people that the State Patrol has cited for traveling at equal or greater than 100 miles an hour. If
wow.
I take that same number back to 2016, for the same time frame, we only had 230 motorists that were cited. So 431 so far this year.
Okay, so why? I mean, can your officers gather that when they pull people over? Do we have national data? Why are people speeding in these conditions?
You know, there's multiple things that we have looked at of why are people traveling at those types of speeds. A lot of it has to do with one of the number one reasons that we were getting why people were pulled over and why they were traveling that fast is people were actually telling us, we didn't think you were out here working. Everybody was supposed to be home, social distancing. We didn't think you were out here working. That's quite the opposite, because we have to. That, you know, our office doesn't let us sit at home. We are out here to provide a safety and provide a service to the motorists and make sure that people travel safe. And when we see that reduced number of traffic, that is another reason that has contributed to people traveling at these excessive speeds is they may have been traveling at that speed all along, but they had other motorists that were kind of getting in their way. But now that we've seen that reduction in traffic on our roadways, they're not having to be slowed down because of those other people that were getting in their way.
I wonder, Sergeant, since we've had this great increase, spike in the number of people violating the speed limit laws by going over 100 miles an hour, for instance, as you explained, what about crashes, injuries, and fatalities? Are there more or fewer, the same? What is the data there? Have you looked into that?
Yeah, we've been watching that pretty closely, both the Iowa State Patrol and the Iowa DOT. That's something that we look at every single day, is where our traffic fatality count is at. And with the reduced number of traffic that is out on the roadways, that has helped reduce our crashes that are happening out there. And so far to date, we have 79 fatalities on our roadways, which is actually a reduction of 22 from just last year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we look at that, and although those 79 lives that were lost, we don't want to forget about those lives that are lost, because that's still somebody's family, that's still somebody's loved one.
Of course.
But that has reduced, and as well as the crashes have reduced. They kind of go up and down as far as on a week-to-week basis, and some different factors that go in there. But ultimately, our traffic crashes have reduced, and that's in large part due to having the reduction of traffic out on the roadways.
Right, and we would expect that to have an uptick now that more and more are going back to the roadways. We get our volume back trending up towards the previous volumes. Quickly before we go, Sergeant Dinkla, give us a quick description of how Iowa State Patrol officers approach cars differently that are pulled over now during the COVID era.
Yeah, obviously our officers have been instructed to utilize social distancing as well. But that is one thing, you know, that we always are taking into consideration anytime that we come into contact with anybody. Just the nature of our job is that we're always cognizant of our space and how much space we have between somebody else and how we interact, and always watching ourselves with that. But our officers have been given PPE equipment. If they want to utilize a mask, by all means, they're able to utilize that mask. And if they have to interact with somebody's vehicle or anything like that, they have gloves. They're able to wear that PPE equipment. But on a day-to-day basis, our officers are really being cognizant of watching that. And mostly, our officers, for the most part, are really watching for those serious violations, those ones that cause accidents, cause crashes. And, you know, obviously, I've already kind of told you how much those speed violations are up. We don't have a problem watching for those serious violations right now. Every single day, officers are constantly sending me a picture of the radar or talking to me and saying, "Hey, Sarge, I got somebody going 130 today. I got somebody going 125 today."
Wow.
I mean, some of our high speeds that we've had is 150 miles an hour, 148, 141.
Right.
Those speeds are out there that we're seeing every day.
Right. And then I bet you it's not just a warning these drivers get with such a violation.
No, absolutely. There is it's obviously an officer's discretion what they want to choose to cite somebody and give somebody a ticket for. But at those speeds, there's no debate. You're going to receive a citation if you're caught going that fast.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Sergeant Alex Dinkla, for your service, for your fellow officers' service there, keeping our roads safe. Also, the upcoming Memorial Day weekend, I'm sure it'll be a busy weekend. Thank you very much for this conversation, Sergeant.
You bet. You have a great day.
You too. Sergeant Alex Dinkla is a public information officer with the Iowa State Patrol. Well, let's finish up this program. Well, over the years, we've tracked changes in technology connected with the driving by checking in with Dan McGehee. He's director of the National Advanced Driving Simulator at the University of Iowa, also associate professor of industrial and systems engineering at the UI. NADS, that's the acronym that the National Advanced Driving Simulator goes by, is becoming one of the nation's leaders in the study of transportation safety, automated vehicles, also in rural settings, we find out. Dan McGehee, welcome back to our program.
Hi, Ben. Great to be with you today.
We've got about 10 minutes here. I want to talk about your grant. Any surprises there and what you're hearing from the Iowa State Patrol and the way this has changed behavior out there? Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, we're very concerned about those speeds because I think, put simply, speed kills. And what I'm concerned about right now is as we start to populate those roadways more and more, that those speeds will remain high. And that whereas we should be seeing a downturn, as Sergeant Dinkler mentioned, because of the lack of traffic, we could actually see an increase this year because of those speeds. So we're really worried about that.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about this $7 million grant from the U.S. Department of Transportation that NADS, the National Advanced Driving Simulator, has received. It's sort of that money is starting to be used now. Explain the goal of this $7 million grant.
Yeah, this was very exciting for us to receive. This was a highly competitive round of projects. Over 65 different organizations applied for these grants, and only seven were awarded. So we're really among the top tier of research institutions in the country to receive this grant. And what's unique about it is that it really covers rural America. The project is called Automated Driving Systems for Rural America. And that's in contrast to the kind of work that's being done in Silicon Valley and Arizona, Nevada, where they have hot, dry roads 12 months out of the year. Mm-hmm. We don't have that. Your listeners know what it's like to experience an Iowa winter, and especially in the rural aspects where we have gravel roads, we have farm machinery, we have horse-drawn carriages. There's a big difference between driving in Iowa than there is in Silicon Valley.
Mm-hmm. And so with an automated vehicle, if you don't have a proper road, in fact, you know, automated vehicles, as you've described in past programs, pay attention to painted lines, for instance. If you have a gravel road or have things that just are not programmed into that automated vehicle, this is a much harder test, would you say, for automated vehicles?
Yes, absolutely. And that's really why funding from corporations and the government is sort of pushing this off towards the last part of the research and application, is that it's hard to do what we're doing. We've demonstrated a number of these technologies. Even I think 3 winters ago, we demonstrated the first automated driving in a snowstorm in a roundabout. That's not been done anywhere in the world. Even though it's sometimes done with sort of unintelligent guidance systems, it's much more complicated when you increase the intelligence of these systems and integrate technologies. And that's what we'll be doing for this automated driving systems in rural America project.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what vehicles, what technology in these vehicles will you be using? I've been with you sitting in the passenger seat in previous generations of semi-automated vehicles. What do you have now and what will you be testing going forward?
Well, this is kind of a unique project in the sense that our job is really to collect data for many others around the country and even the world to use to study rural driving. And so we're actually going to be specially instrumenting, it looks like a minibus with our collaborators, Autonomous Stuff, the company that we're working with. And on this kind of minibus, we'll have about a route that starts in Iowa City that's 47 miles long. It drives through hills, Riverside, Kelowna, and around, makes 4 stops. And we'll actually have passengers on this vehicle and, of course, a couple of safety drivers, always important. On that vehicle will be all sorts of bristling technologies, from scanning lasers called LIDAR to computer vision systems, radars, and so forth. And then, of course, the all-important digital maps, or the high-definition map, where we can, you know, map the road instead of plus or minus, you know, 3 or 3.5 feet from our smartphones, GPS. We're actually going to be, this roadway will be plus or minus about an inch, so 1.5, 2 inches. So highly resolute maps that this vehicle drives on as well. So it'll be an interesting drive. We'll certainly invite you to come out and take a ride.
Well, will this vehicle Thank you for the invitation. I will accept right here on the air.
okay,
but
great.
Will this be at any point a driverless vehicle?
No, that's certainly for testing and even application. It's going to be a long, long time before we actually get a driverless vehicle. We're studying all of these technologies in great detail, but it's literally decades away from that on public roads. We'll see the first driverless vehicles on very, very slow speed, predictable parking lots like, you know, events like, you know, Disney parking lots, for instance, to a venue where the vehicle drives 5 miles an hour, 8 miles an hour at the most. Those are out there today in some limited capacity, but it takes a lot of resources to be able to make a vehicle driverless, even in a very slow speed environment. So getting out onto a regular open road is going to take a while to do that. Even the demonstrations and the testing you see in Arizona and Silicon Valley, they will have at least one, usually two now, safety drivers. Even though they might be in the far back seat of a van, they're still looking on.
Mm-hmm. Dan McGehee with us, director of the National Advanced Driving Simulator at the University of Iowa. Dan, one phrase I heard recently in this COVID era that stuck with me, and I'm going to bet it applies heavily to what you're doing. The phrase is, the COVID crisis has accelerated the future, that the path that we were on, we are being propelled there out of necessity even more quickly. Would you agree with that in your area?
Yes, absolutely. Certainly there are some short-term issues that we're all dealing with. But as I tell my colleagues every day, this is a time for opportunity to reshape things very differently than they've been done before. And we all of your listeners, people in engineering and public health and medicine, you pick whatever profession you're in, now is the time to really think big and bold to figure out how we can do our jobs better.
Mm-hmm. And so in what ways do you see this pushing the pedal, the accelerator on development of what you're involved in? I mean, when we think of being picked up and driven somewhere in a sanitized driverless vehicle, that has obvious, I mean, the driver is out of a job. That's not good. But being picked up in a vehicle that has been sanitized where there is no human being in it would be a comfort to a lot of people in a situation like we have now, or we assume there will be, unfortunately, future viruses, perhaps even more threatening than the one we have now.
Yeah, and I think one of the challenges in that case, and again, we're talking about many decades in the future before you would ever be picked up at your house and driven on a regular road somewhere. But that sort of the so-called first mile, the last mile of the drive, especially the transition between people, who cleans that vehicle just in a general sense, much less disinfects that vehicle between riders. But so there's some big questions on how all of that will be done in the future in terms of the cleaning. It's going to be interesting to see how ultimately the design of the interiors of these vehicles will be to be able to accommodate automatic cleaning systems. So let's just say you have a little Roomba robot vacuum cleaner that pops out and drives all over the inside of the car. Those kinds of things are going to have to be considered. And I don't know anybody that's doing that yet, but those will be part of the details. But we'll ultimately be looking at that.
Maybe the interior of your car will start to resemble the inside of your dishwasher or something like that.
Certainly there. Yeah.
Yeah, you push the cycle and wait for it to suds up and clean and dry, and then you can use it again.
Yeah, much like in Europe, you see some of the public restrooms, you know, on city streets that close up, and they kind of go through a similar dishwashing cycle there as well. But I'm not sure that how we're going to feel about getting into wet seats to our vehicle.
So. Well, we'll have to have a remedy for that. Before we go, give us another. So you've talked about the future; it's many decades away. So, in the last 2 minutes of the program, What are the next big things that we will notice likely available in new cars in the next 5 years or in the next 10 years? What will be there in a new car that you can say be fairly sure that will happen?
Well, the advanced driver assistance systems that are available today in many cars, for instance, Toyota, Subaru, Honda, you know, nearly 100% of those vehicles and others, GM and Ford and Chrysler, have these advanced driver assistance technologies. And what they're doing right now is looking over your shoulder when you get distracted or sleepy and you drift out of your lane. The car will gently steer you back into the center of the lane. These technologies are super exciting, and they came through the University of Iowa over 20 years ago on their research and development journey, whether they were studies run by the car industry or safety regulatory research done by the US DOT. It's exciting to have seen all of those technologies come through the university and actually tested on Iowa roads decades ago. So those technologies, if you're going to buy a new car, buy one now. These technologies are going to be the standard for a number of years to come, so there's no need to wait. They've really shown a really large reductions in crashes, especially forward collisions that are either warn the driver or actually mm-hmm. automatically put on the brakes. Okay. So it's an exciting time to see those technologies.
It's exciting to talk with you always. Dan McGeehee, Director of the National Advanced Driving Simulator at the University of Iowa. Can't wait till that when social distancing allows me to take a ride in that research van, and we'll report on it here on Iowa Public Radio. Dan, thanks so much.
Always a pleasure, Ben. Thank you.
Tomorrow on the program, Politics Day, Jim McCormick of Iowa State University, Dennis Goldford of Drake University. River to River is produced by Rick Brewer, Caitlin Harrop, and Matt Alvarez. Catherine Perkins is our executive producer. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks so much for joining us.